On this episode of Skeptico, Alex talks with Dr. Janet Colley about her new book, Sacred Encounters.
You have an Iraqi war veteran who walks into your office and says, I'm suffering post-traumatic stress syndrome, which 20 years ago, again, was highly controversial. But now we'd say, okay, yeah, and you'd have a series of protocols that you might take that person through. What are the limits on what you can do with someone like that versus what you do with someone who comes in and said, I think I had an encounter with alien beings and I've had this for a long time and it's really causing me a lot of stress? As a clinician, how do you deal with those two situations? How are they similar? How are they different?
You know what? I would say that the nervous system, we don't make up trauma. The signs of trauma are pretty well recognized now. That knowledge and those experiences pretty much overwhelmed all of the questions of, well, are people making up things? You want to treat it as trauma and to some degree respect what people are saying, even if you yourself are not sure of the objective, so-called objective reality of what happened.
Stay with us for Skeptico.
Welcome to Skeptico, where we explore controversial science with leading researchers, thinkers, and their critics. I'm your host, Alex Sakaris, and on this episode, we talk with Dr. Janet Colley about her book, Sacred Encounters. Now, Dr. Colley is a practicing clinical psychologist with a background in transpersonal psychology, and her book is quite remarkable, right up our alley in that it kind of reaches beyond the normal limits of consciousness and takes the larger implications of consciousness research. And that is that if consciousness extends beyond our little brain, then how far does it extend? And she takes that all the way to alien encounters, UFO encounters, which is a topic that I've been interested in a lot lately because it seems like one of those taboo topics that, despite the enormous implications of it, is avoided by most people. Now, let me read for you an Amazon review of Dr. Colley's book. Again, the book is Sacred Encounters, and here's what one Amazon reviewer writes. I have read a lot of ET/UFO-related books, and I would have to put this close to the top. In my own mind, there's a progression in so-called UFO literature. At the base would be older books dealing with the so-called nuts and bolts of UFO sightings that have value convincing skeptics that UFOs are real. At the apex, I would place books dealing with wisdom of star beings or their part in consciousness transformation. Sacred Encounters deals extensively with consciousness transformation in the lives of contactees that Dr. Colley worked with. As the stories unfold, we see the initial extreme fear eventually replaced by love and feelings of family or community towards the ET beings they're interacting with. Now, I read for you that review of the book because we talk very little about the book in this interview. And the reason for that is, I don't know if it's my fault or just the interaction between me and Dr. Colley, but I feel like there's such a big gap here between believers, in this case, believers in alien contact, and non-believers, and that is everyone who isn't totally on board. Well, I feel that gap can't be easily bridged, and maybe it can't be bridged in a one-hour interview like I tried to do here. But instead, where I took this interview was an attempt to bridge that gap. And as a lead-in to the interview that I did with Dr. Colley, let me play for you some of the conversation we had before the actual interview, because I think it'll give you a feel for what I'm talking about here. Here's a conversation where Dr. Colley asked me, okay, who is the Skeptico audience? And I tell her, and then we get into, I think, some of the Skeptico kind of issues in terms of how we know what we know. Listen to this for a few minutes, and then I'll come back on and tee up the rest of the interview.
How would you characterize your audience, if I might ask?
No, I'm glad you did. My audience is, you know, very open-minded and progressive-minded. So we just kind of call the skeptical nonsense for what it is and say, you know, that's just a crazy, irrational worldview that just really doesn't make sense. But in the spirit of doing that, I think we have to remain skeptical as well. And when we get into consciousness, there's a lot of different people saying a lot of different things out there. And the example I always use is reincarnation. I've had on a variety of people, respectable people, and they'll tell you anything from it's an illusion, it doesn't really happen, and that, you know, they've ascended to the next level and their masters, spirit guides are saying there's no such thing as reincarnation. Or someone will say there's multiple simultaneous reincarnations at the same time. I just heard that from my last guest, Dr. Julia Sante, who is really bright and has written a book that, you know, a lot of the top people really, really like. And I'm okay with that. But then, you know, that flies in the face of somebody else that says, well, you can, you know, from the old spiritualism of the early 1900s, we learn that you can reincarnate three times. Yeah. I mean, so I guess what I'm saying is we need healthy skepticism beyond this silly, ridiculous, you're a biological robot skepticism. You do a great job of this in your book. And that's that, this is you speaking. I'm a professional. I'm a people helper. People come to me and I help them. And this is what I do. So when I get these anomalous experiences, here's how I process them. I say, could it be this? Could it be this? Could it be this? And when none of those things fall into place, then I say, okay, now I have to kind of expand my thinking and go into this.
Yeah. Okay. You know what? A good rule of thumb is I'm not out here to convince anybody. I'm going to share my experiences and maybe some of the people I've worked with or know of and share a perspective. And by sharing that, if it opens up somebody else's or causes them to see or think in a new way, that's great. But I won't try to convince anybody because that's where we run afoul. See, you know, because you really have, as you say, you kind of have to live it. And I can't give nobody else is in my body but me, right? And so, you know, if I could do a Vulcan mind meld, right, that might work. But I can only kind of, you know, open up a window into my reality and you can look in a bit. But ultimately, I'm not walking around in your shoes and you're not walking around in mine. So I'm not going to try to convince anyone of, oh, aliens exist or not. It's just, you want to know what it's like to be in this world, I can share that. I can share a bit of that. And that's when it gets interesting.
The experience thing is tricky too, right? Because I've run into people who say, well, this is my experience. I'm sorry, you know, this is my experience. It's like, well, no, wait a minute. This is the game we're all playing, is this consensus reality game. That I can compare my experience to your experience, and then I can compare it to a larger body of experiences, and I can glean something out of that. Okay, so that's where we started, and then where we headed was, I guess I'm responsible for taking us there, but kind of a deconstruction of how we even know that transpersonal psychology is a worthwhile pursuit and how we would fit some of these extraordinary experiences into the scientific model we have for understanding this. Of course, we didn't get to the meat of Dr. Coley's book, which is fascinating, of course, and right up my alley and so relevant to the topics that I want to get into, and that is the connection between extended consciousness / spirituality and these encounters that people seem to be having with other alien species. But maybe we'll leave that for a future interview. For now, here's my dialogue with Dr. Janet Coley. Today we welcome psychotherapist and author Dr. Janet Elizabeth Coley to Skeptico to discuss her book, Sacred Encounters, Spiritual Awakenings During Close Encounters. Yes, We are going there with Close Encounters. So, Dr. Culley, welcome to Skeptico. Thanks so much for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me. This is great.
Well, it's going to be an interesting ride. Your topic, your book is obviously going to be very controversial to a number of people. I can only imagine some of the conversations you've had with your colleagues. Maybe we can get into that at some point. But what I thought we might do is just start with you telling us a little bit about yourself and in particular about your training as a psychotherapist.
You know, I just had a story published in Bernie Siegel's book, A Book of Miracles. It's about my experience with cancer. I would have to say that that's a real starting point for me in how I got into doing my work as a psychotherapist. So my write-up is in that book, and my experience in healing was extraordinary. And that is how I got into working with people that have other extraordinary experiences.
So your experience with cancer led you to want to help other people. So you're a therapist now. And what kind of patients do you work with?
I work with all kinds of patients, all kinds of clients. But the work I like to do best is transpersonal work. Transpersonal work generally has some sense or some aspect of trauma in it. So you have to have a firm grounding in trauma, which is why I studied clinical psychology. And I take off from that foundation into the transpersonal. Now, close encounters are going to fall into transpersonal psychology. It's going to be non-ordinary. You're dealing with altered states. So I did my graduate work with a firm foundation in clinical psychology, but you're taking off from there and you're including work with the numinous, the sacred, the non-ordinary, and what is outside the box. I knew I wanted to study close encounters because I read one of the best cases in ufology that exists. And I resonated and knew that this woman was in a mystical, an authentic mystical experience, and I wanted to study that. But it wasn't until I had cancer that I had the real grounding in my own personal experience. And that's so necessary. You have to have some way to identify with or resonate or have a sense of what the people you're working with are talking about, whether that's some form of trauma and abuse and dissociation, which, guess what, that's an altered state too, or if you're dealing with the sacred. So I hope I'm giving a little bit of a perspective. You know, I've been working several decades now, and so at this point, I'm kind of looking back, and it's beginning to make more sense than it ever has.
Yeah, I'm still flying into this from the top level down and saying, okay, transpersonal psychology. That, I think, is still pretty controversial within the field of psychology as a whole. I know my wife is a psychologist and used to be a clinical therapist. And when transpersonal psychology was really first kind of getting its feet on the ground 20 years ago, I think it was much more controversial. What is the state of transpersonal psychology? How is it accepted within the psychology community?
You know what? I wouldn't say it's so much not well thought of as it is dissociated from the rest of psychology. It's just, it's out there in its own world. And psychology, there is literally no bridge between clinical and transpersonal psychology. That's why I wrote my second book, The Dark Face of Heaven, which isn't out yet, but because I wanted to provide that bridge, and the bridge is trauma. There's so much that needs to be integrated when you have an experience that's outside the box that in one way or another, you're dealing with an aspect of trauma.
Isn't there somewhat of a grudging respect for transpersonal psychology as it's evolved over the last 20 years to at least acknowledge that there's a whole bunch of people that seem to be having experiences that don't fit neatly into traditional clinical psychology. So there are these experiences and we have to deal with them, be they religious experiences, be they these other kind of anomalous kind of psychic experiences, or, you know, really fringy being these kind of close encounter contactee experiences. So big picture, isn't transpersonal psychology made a little bit of headway there?
Well, if you look at the field of near-death studies, everybody now knows what a near-death experience is. I mean, you can tune into The Simpsons and find the dog having a near-death experience. So sure, yes, there have been inroads, but the field itself is largely disconnected and dissociated. Frankly, I think that the role that trauma plays in both clinical and transpersonal psychology is the bridge itself.
That's your thesis. I mean, that isn't established. That's just kind of what your clinical work is telling you.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But that, of course, is extremely controversial, and not a lot of people would jump onto that bandwagon right off the bat. And I think part of the reason is that when we start talking about these non-ordinary experiences, don't we have a real problem in terms of once we go there, once we leap over that chasm and say consciousness exists on these other non-ordinary levels beyond their kind of day-to-day world, isn't it kind of a free-for-all? Can we really put that back into an organized, systematic way that we feel comfortable with from an academic, from a clinical psychology, from a medical kind of perspective? Can we really get there, or is it always going to be this inability to integrate these two worlds? Because that's what I hear. I mean, as soon as you start talking about that, that stuff sounds way out there, I think, for most people who are grounded where clinical psychology is in the mainstream.
Well, you know, there is the thing of the topic itself is studied differently. It's experienced differently. You can't take a non-linear experience and then provide just a linear frame to it. And John Mack, I don't know if you're familiar with his work, the late psychiatrist, Nobel Prize winning psychiatrist who worked with experiencers or alien abductees, as they were called about a decade ago. But he would point this out a lot, that you cannot study this in the same way, that the topic itself, you need to look at it, you need to be open to a different way to look at it as well. And so I guess I have to say is that's the exciting part about this is you start out with a very solid foundation, trauma, you study clinical psychology, you study, you know, how to work with altered states of abuse, right, and dissociation. But then once you're on the path, you start to evolve as well. As a clinician, I can only say that working with people that have had these encounters, it opens up the door to a different way to experience life myself. So, you know, so I can't remain in the old view of science being totally objective, et cetera. I hope we're far along now that we know that that's just not how it is, that our paradigm and our perspective influences how we're going to study this. And so when you study the numinous, you're opening that door up yourself to experiencing something like that, even as you study it, you know, even as you treat it. I hope that that doesn't sound too far out, but.
Well, I think it's challenging. By the way, I think Mack won the Pulitzer Prize, not the Nobel Prize, but I get your point.
Oh, Pulitzer, I'm sorry.
Well, that's okay. But I get your point, but it's challenging, right? And there's some risks associated with that, because certainly as a clinician, getting too close, losing a little bit of that perspective can be problematic as well. I mean, how do you deal with that? Let me put it in terms of, you have an Iraqi war veteran who walks into your office and says, I'm suffering post-traumatic stress syndrome, which 20 years ago, again, was highly controversial, but now we'd say, okay, yeah, and you'd have a series of protocols that you might take that person through. What are the limits on what you can do with someone like that versus what you do with someone who comes in and said, I think I had an encounter with alien beings and I've had this for a long time and it's really causing me a lot of stress? As a clinician, how do you deal with those two situations? How are they similar? How are they different?
Well, there are similarities in the sense of, you know, if you deal a lot with people with PTSD, with war trauma, you're probably going to get to a point where you have to watch for burnout, right? You have to watch that you're not vicariously experiencing their trauma, that you're not also being traumatized yourself as you treat them. And so it's similar with dealing with the non-ordinary is you want to be able to tell when you yourself are slipping into the paradigm that they're presenting. So you have to be aware of it. Now, there's no way that you're going to be able to totally wall that off. I mean, that's where the alliance, therapeutic alliance comes in.
Well, what about more on just a practical sense? I mean, we've also lived through in the last 20 years the whole controversy, still unresolved, of repressed memories, false memories. And just on a more kind of basic level, people having hallucinations or just inventing stuff, confabulating, right? So you have to deal with that. That's part of the therapist's job, too.
You know what? I would say that the nervous system, we don't make up trauma. The signs of trauma are pretty well recognized now. That knowledge and those experiences pretty much overwhelmed all of the questions of, well, are people making up things? You want to treat it as trauma and to some degree respect what people are saying, even if you yourself are not sure of the objective, so-called objective reality of what happened, is you want to be treating that and using trauma methods. I use EMDR a lot, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. And it really does help the nervous system process things that are difficult.
Now, hold on. Let's back up and tell people a little bit about EMDR, because I think in a way, it's a small little case study in some of the topics that I've just been probing, because from what I understand, the clinical research on EMDR is quite strong. I mean, they've tested it, it's found to be efficacious and in different modalities for different treatments, all this stuff. And yet there's still this resistance to it because, well, what is really the theory behind it and all the rest? So in a lot of ways, it kind of encapsulates some of the discussion we've been having. Can you fill in some of the sketchy details that I have there and tell us a little bit about that?
Well, it's a bilateral stimulation, and it's not just with eye movements, but that's how it started. And you basically, you move the attention of the person from one side to the other, from the right to the left and the right to the left again, and that helps the brain. That's kind of what happens during REM sleep. If you know how your eyes move back and forth when we're dreaming, we're processing material, and that's what you do. You just initiate the brain's natural healing mechanism with that, either through eye movements or tapping, bilateral tapping. And I've used this with all kinds of difficult situations, but I just want to put out that if people who have had any kind of non-ordinary experience can get themselves to a mental health professional and ask for EMDR, it can really help to bring them out of whatever state of difficulty they're in. And I've used it with people with what I consider to be close encounters, and it helps a lot. It's just that people at this point, when I talk about transpersonal psychology being dissociated from traditional psychology. It's that people don't realize that you can actually go to a therapist and you can say, I want to work on something that was really scary for me when I was out of my body, say. If you can find somebody that's open, it really does help. We're just in the last few decades realizing the prevalence of the incidence of sexual trauma and abuse and childhood abuse, and the people go to therapy now for that. And I wish that people begin to be more open to dealing with the non-ordinary in a therapeutic setting. That will evolve and heal some of this split that I see between, you know, as we talk about transpersonal or clinical psychology. So people that have had close encounters, for example, they may not tell anybody about this for decades, and I may be the first person they tell, okay? And they come in, and yet you can see that they've had to dissociate this, and they've held in some really hard to deal with aspects of it, and that doesn't do you any good.
Well, yeah, and maybe there's a reason to be cautious. I came in contact with you, Dr. Coley, through Mike Cleland at Hidden Experience podcast, and Mike tells an interesting story in his show about living in a small town and having a lot of feelings, depression associated with these experiences that he's had, these anomalous experiences, and he goes in to see a therapist. And again, he doesn't claim to have a contactee experience. He just claims to have these rather unique, anomalous experiences. After a session, she goes, you know, here's the medication. You're disturbed. Consider kind of checking yourself in kind of thing. So the reality that people are going to find if they do seek help is just a wide spectrum of of health care that they might receive. And I think it in a funny way, it goes back to, even though I don't like the way that you kind of packaged it in terms of that the therapist is really this partner and it's all about their experience and we can't get any kind of separation from it, clearly that is the case. And I guess we should probably just be more open about it and say, you know, that therapist is bringing a whole set of beliefs and preconceived notions to the table that can really play into this whole thing.
Now, I want to be clear. I'm not saying there is no separation, but I'm saying, I don't think I said there's no separation. I'm saying there is a separation, but it's not going to be some objective reality and wall that we put up where we're the clinician over here, we're the scientist over here, and over there, they're the patient. So, you know, I'm saying you're going to participate in some way with these numinous experiences. Everybody that studies it deeply, whether it's the near-death world, near-death research or studies, people are impacted greatly by just listening to this, okay? And so I just wanted to acknowledge that. I don't say that it's entirely without boundaries. Of course not. Otherwise, I wouldn't be a doctor. So,
and there's all sorts of boundaries. You know, I had a conversation a while back with a guy I really like. He's the head of the religious studies department at Rice University.
Yes, and Jeffrey Kripal.
Jeffrey Kripal. Written some great books. We get all the way through, and he's obviously dealing with some very out there kind of stuff like we are, about consciousness, about our connection to super beings and all this stuff. At the end of the show, we get talking, and he goes, but Alex, there is a crazy line out there, and we don't want to go over the crazy line. And he keeps talking about the crazy line and he's talking about UFO abductees. He's talking about people that believe that, the example he used, people who believe that there's alien bases underground, for example. Now, that's his crazy line. I don't know about that crazy line, but I know I wouldn't necessarily, I don't know, I don't have any personal knowledge of that.
Isn't that interesting that we're all going to have a different crazy line?
Well, isn't that interesting? And doesn't that create some real problems? I mean, on one hand, I appreciate his honesty, because we all do have kind of a crazy line. But on the other hand, aren't we constantly redefining this crazy line.
That's a good point. You know, it's interesting you're talking about him. He's going to do the foreword for my second book.
Make sure you don't go over the crazy line.
But he very much shares the trauma can be the introduction into the numinous and into the sacred. And so we have common ground. We've managed to cross our own crazy lines into a common ground ourselves. And if we can do that, I'm sure that many other professionals can. Oh, I do want to touch upon what you said about going to a mental health professional. I just want to say is if you get somebody that tries to diagnose and prescribe you in a way that you don't feel is appropriate, well, then you move on, but you don't stop there. Is, you know, nowadays people are finding me, they look under spiritual emergency or transpersonal, as well as EMDR, and there are other clinicians out there, but don't stop there. Is if you have a sense that their treatment and their perspective doesn't work for you, then move on. But that in and of itself is, you know, even if you're going to have to push, it's going to be worth it. And I just want to say that.
Okay. So, Dr. Cully, you've written this book, Sacred Encounters, Spiritual Awakenings During Close Encounters. People get it right from the beginning, what you're talking about. Can you, for a minute, play a little game for me? I want you to play devil's advocate for a minute, because I think it helps define for people this idea of the crazy line being a little bit more fuzzy than we think it is. Because I think we walk around like Dr. Kripal, who's a great guy, but has this rigid crazy line, and not realizing that, you know what, that crazy line's a lot fuzzier than we think it is. And I think pressing up against that and realizing it's more fuzzy is a very freeing thing.
The question isn't, how would I explain it away? The question is, what do I find along with it that I also have to watch out for or just be aware of? We used to have a sense that people who've had these experiences are wacko, that they're going to be diagnosable and abnormal and maybe even schizophrenic. Okay. That view has changed, well, in the last decade. And I brought up John Mack before, and he took great pains to point out that all kinds of people have had these experiences, and they're professional, and professionals have had this, and you know, all. So we like to outline all the many different kinds of people that have these encounters, and so that took place within the last decade. What I would say now is what I also see is that you can't say either way. You can't say just speaking to this makes it authentic, or makes a person, on the other hand, a candidate for mental illness, because you're going to have cases that bridge both. You're going to have cases where you can see something has happened, but maybe the framework of the person's personality, right, is going to be make the experience incoherent. You see, now that's a tricky one. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Of course.
So that you could have somebody with a personality disorder, say, or and they so that their psyche cannot handle the energy. Okay, their psyche can't handle the energy, but you can tell that there's been something that, you know, I'll just use the word numinous again, something numinous or something extraordinary that they've encountered, but that you're not going to get a real good coherent picture of it because of the nature of their psyche. So I've gone beyond either saying, oh, these people are perfectly ordinary, or these people are absolutely mentally ill. Okay. So this tells me that I'm on the right track, because you're going to have this with any phenomenon. Say, I mean, you have people going into war and some of these, you know, you may have somebody that's totally unfit for that situation and they crack up. Okay. And so, you know, they've been subjected to a trauma that their psyche just simply can't process. And we know that war trauma is real. Well, it's the same for this phenomenon. So I have to be aware that the psyche is a container of itself and it can only handle so much stress and so much. Either they shift to a dynamic that is more efficient and effective and a higher order one, or they crack under the strain. So that's the most interesting thing to me is where is that balance, you know, when you're working with someone so that once again, what can you tell about the actual experience apart from the person that's sitting across from you and you know, how their psyche has dealt with it. But I'm pretty clear at this point that there's enough, I've seen enough, and I've certainly researched enough that there's something, let's just say something out there, that there are, I would even go so far as to say beings that are non-human, that are higher order intelligences, and that we can have interaction and that we can gain enormously from the interaction and evolve. And that's exactly what's happening, I believe, on the planet.
And you believe that because your clinical work with people who say they've encountered these beings?
Oh, yes.
And your entry point into that is trauma. Take us through that connection between what you just said, the trauma that these folks have experienced, and your conclusion that there are beings that they're interacting with, number one, and that these beings are of a higher order of consciousness, number two.
Anything that is outside your ordinary paradigm is going to potentially be difficult to process. If you encounter something that is outside of your view of reality, outside of your paradigm, that's going to have to be processed. And your view of reality is going to have to expand. And that's what I mean when I say these experiences have the potential for expanding one's consciousness. It can be physiological as well, because once you've been through something that's incredibly traumatic and you heal from that, generally you're going to have a wider range of responses. You're going to know something about how to be in your body under great stress. So dealing with the trauma is the first aspect. Anything extraordinary has the potential of being difficult or traumatic, even if the upshot of it is positive.
Okay, I like the idea. I like the whole thing of trauma being kind of common denominator here. And I like why you say, as a clinician, I can feel pretty confident going into trauma. There's a grounding there that I say, oh, this is trauma. We know it. There are the physical characteristics. Here are the emotional characteristics, blah, 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 blah. I get that. And then I hear you saying that gives you confidence to say, okay, there's something there to work with. Then how do you get to the point to where to support what you just said? That is that what you're working with is people who have encountered other beings of a higher ordered consciousness, beings from outside of our solar system. How do you get to all that?
Okay, so the first part was trauma. The second part is the higher order intelligence or the higher order consciousness that people are capable of experiencing or entering as a result. And what I'd like to say is, and this goes back to my mentioning again and again, transpersonal psychology, which deals with non-ordinary or altered states of consciousness, that people have had experiences of this nature with the close encounters that have taken them out of subject-object consciousness. Now, subject-object consciousness is pretty much our the standard domain here on this planet, in which we pretty much see objects as separate And then we somehow, as the background, perhaps can perceive the unity. With unity consciousness, it's the opposite. So you perceive the unity first, and the differences as secondary. A good example of this is Edgar Mitchell's experience when he, anybody that goes outside into space, it's called the outlier effect. They have a tendency to have some non-ordinary or some shift of consciousness happen. And so he went into unity consciousness as part of his...
his reentry or his...
Right. I don't know the technical term for that. But yes, when he was in space, when people encounter something that takes them out of their ordinary state of consciousness, indeed, the pretty much the common state of consciousness for humanity now, and they're brought into into either unity or a higher order state of consciousness, then you look at what caused that to happen, and you look at the effect of that. That's why I'm studying and working with these people, because it is transforming them and bringing them into higher order states. The mind that is doing that is generally already there. The being that is encountered is already in a higher order state. It's kind of like the way the guru system works with Shaktipat or Darshan, is you step up your vibration to the level of the guru during these periods where you're in their presence, or when they're giving you an energetic hit, right? It upgrades your vibration, and that's what's happening during these encounters. So there are degrees of enlightenment, and I want to look at what happens in close encounters when people's state of consciousness is altered and it affects their whole life.
Well, it's a fascinating and important body of work on so many levels, and as I think we've tried to touch on some of those, and the first being that folks who feel that they've been traumatized by these kind of experiences, there are resources out there for them to process it, deal with it, and hopefully, as you're talking about, actually use it to move forward in their life in a positive way. It's a wonderful book. It's going to be very challenging for a lot of our listeners to get into, but I hope that we've given them maybe a small sense of why they might want to go there and explore this possibility. Again, the book is Sacred Encounters, Spiritual Awakenings During Close Encounters. Dr. Janet Elizabeth Coley is the author, and thanks so much for joining us today, Dr. Coley.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thanks again to Dr. Coley for joining me today on Skeptico. A couple of questions to tee up from this interview, and I think they center around this idea of experience, because we've bumped up against this before. You know, it's interesting, of course, because the mainstream science skeptical argument you'll get against all these kind of phenomena that we've explored on this show, be they near-death experience, out-of-body experience, precognitive experience, all these experiences, those are not scientific. We cannot explore those because they're the internal experience of an individual, and we can never get there. And one thing that's interesting when you jump over to psychology and many of the other social sciences, you immediately see that prohibition against understanding or exploring human experience doesn't exist. There would be no such thing as psychology or psychiatry if we weren't willing to try and understand human experience. It's really a bizarre claim that's made about this. We can't approach experience. So what Dr. Coley does is even more interesting than that. She goes, okay, I'm in this area of transpersonal psychology that's really kind of fringy in terms of trying to understand these non-ordinary experiences. What I'm going to do is start from trauma, because we understand trauma. We accept that trauma happens and it leaves these physical markers, these physical scars in people that are common, and they're common throughout all these experiences. But it still begs the question, the larger question of what do we do with human experience? How do we approach it from a scientific perspective? It's a topic that we've touched on several different times on this show, but I think it's one that's worth bringing up again, particularly when we're talking about and trying to get our arms around these experiences that are so outside of what many people will normally accept, and that is experiences of encounters with alien beings. So there's a bunch of questions kind of wrapped together in there, so that's probably enough to tackle from this one show. And of course, we'd love to hear from you and have you offer your opinions and your ideas on that. The place to do it, of course, is the Skeptico website at skeptiko.com. You can leave a comment right there on the website or bounce over to our forum and join the discussion there. While you're at Skeptico, you can check out any of our over 200 previous shows or drop me a note via email or Facebook. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Skeptico. I have several interesting shows coming up, a couple more on this UFO contactee experience, and some other familiar topics as well. Please stay with me for all of that. But until next time, take care and bye for now.